Is the ship prepped?
Yes.
But I'm gonna need an extra hand.
But we need gas.
I'm going.
No, you're not.
Going where?
That's ridiculous. What if it's a trap?
It's a trap. It changes nothing. You gotta go down to the hangar and get us on the test roster. I don't wanna be shut down pulling out of here. Melshi, you're here.
Gas.
You know I'm right.
We need a flight plan.
It's a test run. We're not filing a flight plan.
I hear the Revnov talking.
All right, welcome back to... What's our podcast called? I always forget the name.
It's Logic Gate. It's so catchy.
It is. It really rolls right off my own tongue.
It's not embarrassing to tell anyone, any of my friends about.
We're hot off a discussion where Nugent was talking about how he has all the wrong opinions about Lord of the Rings. So we're already spun up. So you're in for an energetic episode. Not to set the bar too high. Today we're discussing Andor Season 2, Episode 11. My name is Scott. I'm joined by my friends...
Jason.
And Doug.
So today we are on the penultimate episode for the series. There's one episode after this. The title of this episode is Who Else Knows? So I want to start off by saying, Jason, before we even started, said that this was going to be a really short episode and nothing interesting happened. I want to set the record straight right now that he's wrong, and we're going to go into all the reasons why this was a great episode.
It was slightly uneventful. Like, you know, it's not a lot that happens.
Okay. All right. So the episode opens immediately after Kleya has euthanized Luthen. They have the hospital staff has determined that Luthen is dead, and they realize something foul has occurred under their noses. We see Joy Dally and Hurt, two investigators from the last episode. They are on the scene and they are looking into this hospital attack or this incident.
Supervisor Hurt, it was Daedra's assistant and now in charge of the Axis investigation.
They are keen to pin this failure on Daedra, the fact that Daedra's gone off the reservation. She's kind of persona non grata with pretty much everybody in the Empire at this point. She pulled too many strings to get where she needed to get to with Luthen. So, as we'll see throughout the episode, she's burned a lot of bridges. Most obvious here is, with her previous assistant, Hurt, who is now, I would say, very aggressively looking into her involvement in this.
The ISB is all about playing the blame game and trying to get yourself clean of like any faults. It seems like it's all trying to avoid getting...
I mean, we've definitely seen that since the very beginning of this show. Failure results in severe punishment in the ISB, whether it's just demotion or jail time, whatever. So nobody there wants to be associated with failure, and this is a pretty big failure. So,
And this is not her first failure either, because they've already pinned the Ferrix thing on her.
That's right.
She was already, I want to say, on the outs. Joy Dally and Hurt, they suspect a three-man infiltration team. I think the implication here is that it went so smoothly and it was well executed that it certainly could not have been done by one person. We know that that is not true. The Joy Dally and Hurt, they have locked the doors to the hospital. I got the impression this is a military hospital, right? This is like an Empire hospital. This isn't an open-to-the-public hospital.
If we go back to the previous episode, it sure looked like there were a lot of civilians in the hospital, like that weird alien grandma lady that she was pushing around.
Oh, I suppose. Okay. So the doors to the hospital are locked. They're trying to secure the scene so that nobody can come or go and taint the scene. The main hospital administrator shows up and he is not happy that the doors have been locked. He's basically, you know, I've got a hospital to run here. You can't just close the door. They're on, I forget, whatever floor they're on, floor 16. So the implication here is that this is a massive, massive hospital and you can't just close the doors. There's probably thousands of people in this building.
And it does kind of underscore that they're more concerned about... The ISB, I should say, is more concerned about their business, their reputation, rather than like, oh, yeah, we should keep the hospital open because people might need help. No, screw those people. We're going to catch whoever did this.
Yeah, because they threatened to arrest the that supervisor guy just for wanting to keep things open.
Yeah, I thought that was actually a really interesting line. He comes over and demands that they open the door, and he said, whoa, hold on. Who are you? I don't know who you are. I'm going to arrest you for interfering with an investigation. Anybody who's potentially interfering with the investigation is delaying me and is a potential suspect for someone who may have had something to do with this. And he was like, okay, cool. Oh, you made your point. Just do what you got to do, but make it quick kind of thing. We cut to a scene with Krennic. What's Krennic's first name? I don't know.
Bob.
Bob Krennic. Bob Krennic has flown in from wherever the Empire keeps him. I mean, he's a high muckety-muck in the Empire. So he's flown in to interrogate Daedra. They have Daedra in this, you know, white-walled room.
This was a great scene.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And he is pissed. What's the guy's name that plays Krennic? He's been in a bunch of stuff, and he's amazing. He's amazing in this scene, but he's amazing in everything that he does.
I can't think of
Ben Mendelsohn.
There you go. Ben, yes.
I was going to say Bob.
Have you seen Bloodline? I think it's Bloodline.
Yeah, Bloodline's amazing. Yeah.
It's really good.
But yeah, Ben, this Krennic interrogation scene, it's super fantastic Tony Gilroy writing and amazing acting by Ben Mendelsohn.
I wanted to talk about this for a sec. So it is a brilliant scene. And the thing that I particularly love about it is Daedra has, throughout the entire series, intimidated people. Pressured them, basically used her authority to make them uncomfortable. And here it is, a scenario where the tables have turned, and now that same exact tactic is being applied to her. The moral of the story, she forgot her Qui-Gon Jinn. There's always a bigger fish.
Krennic is interrogating her, basically. He grabs her, he gets right in her face, and he says, say the word. Why am I here? I'm high muckety muck in the Empire. Why did they send me all the way out here to deal with you instead of having somebody else, you know, come out or just throw you in jail? And she says, Death Star. So the implication,
which is two words, by the way.
Yeah, I thought that was, yeah, whatever. she admits that she knows about that. I got the implication from that she's not, the Death Star is super,
it's classified.
Secret. She should not know about it. The only way she knows about this is because she has Lonnie's files and she's been digging.
Wait, she doesn't know about the Death Star?
No, she does, she but does. She's not supposed to.
Well, she's not, but isn't that part of that secret meeting about like the energy program? But I guess they didn't reveal exactly what that was.
So I mean, they kind of talk about it in this scene. She was never cleared to know what it was about. She's intelligent, and she went searching for evidence of Axis, and in doing so, managed to put the pieces together to figure out what they were doing.
Well, specifically Galen Erso. That's what he was mad that she knew about, was Galen Erso.
And the Death Star.
But yeah, I guess that's implied. Maybe I just didn't get that.
The point is, she went snooping where she shouldn't have been.
She says like some packages were delivered to her accidentally.
Accidentally. Sorry, I know this doesn't come across on audio, but I'm using air quotes when I say accidentally.
She's been using all of her power and influence for 2, 3, 4 years now to gather information and try and come up with who Axis is. And along the way, she's figured out that they're building a Death Star and this whole thing. You know, energy plan was a hoax.
She's been a wild card. She's gone outside the system a lot, it seems like.
Krennic is pissed that she knows about the Death Star, and he wants to know who else knows. Because again, this is supposed to be a big secret. If lowly Daedra here, who is a train wreck and keeps messing up all of our operations, know, then who else knows?
He said the thing.
That's the title of the episode. He said the thing. So Krennic is convinced that Jung is the mole. Do we know who Jung is? I mean,
Lonnie Jung.
Oh, they're the same person. Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't put that together. Okay. So he's convinced that Jung has her codes.
Which he did.
And he actually asks, because they were working together, I guess, for a while, he actually asks Daedra, did you give him your codes? Because he's been doing all kinds of stuff that he shouldn't have been.
Well, I'm pretty sure, I don't think it's ever explicitly stated, but I'm pretty sure Luthen told him to steal Daedra's codes.
Sure, right.
Yeah, and no, because remember that last meeting they had together, Lonnie said, revealed to him at that point that he had her codes.
Yeah. Right before he gets murdered.
Yes, that was kind of on, he was on his own a little bit there. And that's why I figured that Daedra was sort of cleared for the Death Star stuff, is because that's how Lonnie found out, was with her specific codes, which had that information, but...
Daedra kind of defers, hey, you know, I know this went south. I know I'm not in your, you know, best graces right now, but I was doing it for the Empire. I was searching for Axis. Mm-hmm. I've been searching for Axis for 3 years. Krennic is, he's not having it. This is just pure overreach on her part. She was never cleared to look for Axis. She's trying to throw a Hail Mary that, hey, I found the really bad guy, so it balances out all the stuff that I shouldn't have done.
And then Krennic throws it in her face. It's like, yeah, you found him, and then you made the genius decision to go after him yourself.
By yourself, without an appropriate team, and now look what's happened. You went at... Right. So, she's... still trying to recover from Krennic getting in her face and telling her she did a horrible job. And he grabs her. She stands up and he grabs both sides of her face with his gloved hands and forces her back into the chair in like the most alpha move ever. And his line is, we'll do our best to carry on without you, in the most dismissive way possible. Like, you have screwed up so much. You're done.
Yeah, that's a cold line. Yeah.
We cut to Joy Dally and Hurt, and they are interrogating what I guess, you know, the IT guy that runs the camera system at the hospital. You know, they're trying to figure out, they still think it's a 3-man team. They're trying to figure out, you know, who got in where. They cut back and forth through a bunch of cameras. We see Kleya looking down and away from the camera in most shots. So she actually did a good job, even when she was infiltrating, of not looking directly, not giving them a clear shot on the cameras. They do ultimately find one or two shots of her, but nothing. She did a good job. She did her job as a spy, that she was able to sneak in. They track her down. They figure out that it was a 1-man job, not a 3-man crew. Yeah, so Hurt says, alone. There is no team. We cut back to Partagaz and Krennic, and they are now debating with, I don't even know who that guy was. They're debating how they're going to bring in Kleya. They know who she is now. They have a picture of her. They, I assume, know her name at this point. They got to bring her in. They're on Coruscant, so big, gigantic city, big, gigantic hospital. Like, how do you bring in, I mean, this is like New York City. How do you find one needle in a haystack kind of thing?
Right.
So Krennic is pressuring who is that guy that they're pressuring? Like the PR guy for the Empire or the communications officer?
That was Hurt in that meeting with Partagaz.
Pretty sure it was.
And he's just, so his line is, there will be no horizon to the scope of your inquiry, nor will there be any limit to your effort. Which is like Shakespearean way to say, you can do whatever the fuck you want as long as you find this lady. Like, it was...
If you don't, you know, your ass is going to be grass.
I just love that line. Like, whatever, 18 words to say, you know, what you could have done with 3. It was just amazing. Well done, chef's kiss writing on that.
I also like how casually Partagaz is able to... Because they're trying to figure out, well, what's the best way to release information? Do we say she's wanted for murder or
he asked sabotage? That question. Yeah, sedition, murder, what's the charge? Because I need to put something on the TV or the wanted poster, right?
And Partagaz just effortlessly is like, she's got a disease. She could infect a bunch of people. Because absolutely 100%, the public in general, if they find out, oh my God, she's a murderer, they're going to try and keep their distance and like, whoa, I don't want to touch this. They find out she's a health risk.
But also conversely, there's probably a lot of rebels on Coruscant or people that aren't friendly to the Empire. If the Empire tells you this person is a murderer and we want her for a suspect, there's going to be a subset of people who are just not going to want to help because I don't want to help the Empire.
Yeah.
But when you bring up the story of she's got some infectious disease, I think even Partagaz says she could kill thousands.
Yeah.
So they put out this story that she has space Ebola or whatever to get everyone to want to rat this lady out. I mean, I thought it was genius. Because like you said, if you had said she was a murderer, it would have been a totally different story.
But just how effortlessly he comes up with the spin on this.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
We cut to Daedra in a holding cell, and Hurt has come down basically to try and get any last bit of information from her. He informs her that Luthen is dead and that Kleya is on the run. He tries to get a little information out of Daedra, and she's kind of like, yeah, you know, I'm at the end. Like, I don't want to help you. Like, she's reevaluating her life choices. But he gets her to leak. He plays on her sympathies, I think, and says, hey, you know, she's really smart and we don't know how to catch her. You're really smart too. Can you tell us where you should look? Rather than just asking her straight up. And she finally caves and she was like, yeah, if you guys are looking, I forget where it was. If you're looking at such and such a street and such, like, she's way too smart for that. But what she might have this radio. That's where I would look, is on these off channels, right? So instead of saying go to her apartment or go to the last, you know, place she worked, they're basically saying go get out your ham radio and listen, because she's a well-educated spy and she's not going to do the obvious thing. She's going to default to these old style comm channels.
She references the like old transmissions, old pulse codes, the same ones that Bix used on Ferrix.
And pretty smart, really, because that's the communication method that the rebels have been using for 5 years, right? I mean, this is the same system that we've seen in the past that they have at Luthen and Clea's shop in the back room, that she says, you know, hey, don't bother checking her Gmail. Don't bother going and asking, you know, her neighbors if they've seen her. You need to go find this obscure radio, because that's probably what she's going to do. We cut to Hurt and the Empire, and they are just tearing apart Luthen's shop. They're trying to get any information they can. They find the radio in the back room that Luthen had poured the goo onto to destroy. And the radio is mostly destroyed, but not 100%. Actually the tech that's like, you know what, the forensic tech that's looking at the radio, she's all excited. She was like, oh, this is really smart. They've been tapped into an Empire radio tower next year for years. This, you know, she was like really impressed with like this, what they had done and what they'd been doing for years underneath the Empire's nose. And like, yeah, Hurt kind of like has to like, you know, smack her down a little bit. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay. She's a bad guy.
Her partner just like, yeah, does the whole like neck thing, like, cut it out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting because it's like a couple of instances in this episode where you have a tech, like you had the camera security guy,
yeah,
and then you had this one, and neither of them could really read the room.
Right. They're like, right.
Because the camera guy was like, hey, was a cousin or someone has an application.
Right, has a job application in with the ISB.
I'm like, dude, now is not the time.
Yeah, yeah. So as they are talking about this radio tower next door, the radio in that they're investigating starts beeping. We see this Morse code style beeping with a little red light. Hurt thinks he has a promising location on Coruscant, so he's able to determine that this radio is, I guess, local. I mean, they're not talking back to Yavin or some other planet.
Right.
They form a squad of about 12 stormtroopers to go investigate from the shop, so they are on it because they realize that time is of the essence. Oh, let's see. That's kind of the end of the Empire plot, and then we'll cut to the Rebels, and then they all meet up at the end. Did I miss anything before we switch to the Rebels?
Not really.
No, some of this stuff happens concurrently, though.
Yeah.
Like,
Cassie, I'm trying to just keep the two plot lines separate. Yeah. Okay, so that's the main plot line of the Empire, is they are interrogating Daedra and trying to track down Kleya, I guess, just to see what she knows. So the B plot, the other plot that's going on, is the Rebels on Yavin. We see Kleya is on Coruscant. I guess we should point out she has not left yet. She is in the safe house, and she has, I don't even know, a hammer and a piece of metal. She's chipping away at the wall,
yeah,
trying to break something out of the wall. She's already pulled that lock and key thing out of the ceiling, and now she's literally chipping through the cement. The Rebels are really prepared in the safe house. They've cemented in this old radio into the wall.
Mm-hmm. Right. John Wick style.
She ends up pulling out an old radio and she starts doing Morse code. So the Morse code that we saw the Empire listening to, or witnessing, I guess, is Kleya doing her thing with this radio that she has recovered from the wall. On
which is also what Willman sees in the scene on Yavin when we get there.
Yep. I think we were just going there.
Yeah, that was the very next. So Willman is on Yavin, and I guess he gets home from work or what. He walks in, and his girlfriend is kind of ticked. She was like, oh, man, I was sleeping, and I got woken up by this radio beeping. I don't know anything about it. Like, it's kind of obnoxious. It won't stop beeping. And
Drina, his girlfriend, Drina. Yes.
Basically, so then Willman flips out. He's like, whoa, hang on. He knows this is a big deal. Like, this is kind of like a last resort. Mm-hmm. If we're hearing Morse code, like, then the fit has hit the shan, so to speak.
Did anyone else get, like, what do you hide? You know, were you cheating on me, Willman? Like, from the girlfriend finding the secret message under his bed?
Well, because he does not tell her what it is.
Yeah.
He just, she
didn't know about it.
Yeah. How long ago did it stop? Tell me more about it. He doesn't give her any information on it.
Yeah.
So, maybe.
I don't know. I got a little bit of like.
But don't you also have to assume if you're a rebel living on the Yavin base that you're going to be, you know.
You could have some.
She strikes me as more civilian than involved with all the. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was a Gorman and she was on part of the Gorman front.
She was just trying to take a nap, Jason. She got woken up by all the beeping.
That's true.
And then she was like, let me see your phone, Willman.
Why you have Tinder installed?
You don't want to share your pulse codes with your girlfriend, dude.
So we cut to Cassian, K2, and Melshi.
Oh, God, I love this scene.
I love everything that K2SO is. This scene is great.
Disagree.
They're playing poker in a different building, but at the same time. So this is at night. You know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. They're sitting around drinking, playing poker or whatever. It never ceases to amaze me. I mean, they do this in science fiction. Like, Next Generation did this all the time, like playing poker with Data. Like, would anyone ever play poker with a robot who can literally calculate the odds? It seems like the stupidest idea to ever play poker with a droid of any kind. But hey, that's what they were doing.
Yeah, not only is this K2SO droid super powerful, but it's also really smart and can like interact socially, and it can calculate odds, and it can like play complicated games. I mean, this thing is.
Don't forget, throw some shade, because K2, my boy, can throw some shade.
Yeah. So basically what happens is Melshi, I'm just going to say he goes all in, or he bets a lot of money, I don't know. And K2 just like does not know how to process it. He was like, you know, the odds of this, like this is not how you normally bet. This doesn't make any sense that you're betting so much money. And they're like, you know what? That's just the way poker is. Sometimes you get a good hand and you bet. And he's like, well, I have a sample size of 963 games and he's never bet like this before. He's like just super analyzing this in the most like Android way possible, which I thought was fantastic.
I think the other part of it that I liked was how Melshi and Cassian were just laughing like, he's scared. Look at him. He's scared.
Yeah.
But it was the entertainment of the droid like failing to calculate the lie or the potential of a lie. And then also the camaraderie of Melshi and Cassian, just two buds hanging out together.
And they're teaming. I think K2 even says that at one point, like, are you guys teaming up on me against me?
It's a good scene. I love that scene.
The game, by the way, interestingly, it's called Rianza.
For real?
It kind of feels like a liar's dice type of game.
Yeah, it's based off of like dominoes and poker, and it's a full game that was created by the production team on Andor.
Are there actually rules? Like, this is a real game? You could actually play this game?
There's full rules. This is the first time it's appeared in Star Wars, but it's now canon with like a full set of rules.
Dude, we should play it. That sounds kind of dope, actually.
I'm down.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Okay. So Melshi and Cassian they're drunk. They're kind of just poking at K2 because it's 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever. K2 can't handle this bet. He just doesn't process it. In fact, at one point he says, I think that was the Revnog talking. So Revnog is, you know, whatever booze they're drinking on Yavin. But he actually attributes their not normal behavior to being drunk. Right about when they're going to figure out this bet, Willman walks in with the radio that woke up his girlfriend. And he starts to tell them what's happened. Hey, I'm hearing Morse code. You know what that means. This is a really big deal. But it hasn't been beeping for the last, let's say, hour. And so Cassian is like, are you sure? You know, it could have been, you know, pulse noise from the universe or whatever. Like, this, it's really unlikely that, you know, we're hearing this. And then as he's saying that, it starts to beep again. So we're getting more Morse code. as soon as that happens, Cassian basically just rushes out the door. He's like, okay, this is legit. The only person that has this type of radio and knows this are the people on Coruscant, where it's basically Luthen and Kleya.
Yeah.
And so he makes a beeline to get out of there. He tells, I forget, K2S, he tells one of them that they need to file a test flight plan so they can get off Yavin. He was like, I don't want this on the radar that we're going back to Coruscant, because no one is ever going to approve a mission to go back to the heart of the Empire. So they basically file a fake flight plan and take off from Yavin against orders. The main flight deck guy is barking over the radio like, you are not authorized to leave. This is reckless. You cannot do this. We spent all this time setting up security on Yavin. Like, you guys just leaving in the middle of this and going back to the heart of the Empire is putting all of us at risk.
Makes sense.
He's not wrong.
No.
I'm trying to remember, was it this episode or was it a previous one where Cassian was like, the day you start telling me when I can and can't leave, I'm gone.
Yes. That was the previous episode.
But it still stands, right?
Cassian will not be tied down. He plays by his own rules.
Yeah. Yep. He just straight up said, you're not my supervisor.
Right. They get on, I don't even know what kind of ship it is. Is it a Y-Wing? I can't remember. They fly back to Coruscant. The flight deck people are not happy that they are leaving without authorization. We hear, I think K2 says, because they're listening to the radio in the cockpit, he was like, we have now ignored 17 orders. And then he tells them to turn the radio off, and he's like, okay, actually, that's 18 orders now we've ignored. As they're flying, I love K2S. I don't know why. Like, I never liked 3PO or even R2-D2, like, they don't have any real personality. But not only does K2SO have personality, but he's got, like, the driest and greatest sense of humor. Like, this scene is perfect. They're flying back to Coruscant, and they're just, like, sitting there making small talk because they've got nothing else to do, and they're all amped up on adrenaline. And it comes up that Melshi has never been to Coruscant. So Cassian's obviously been there. And so is K2SO, because that's where they acquired him. But it comes up that Melshi has never been there. And K2SO goes, oh, I was in a parade on Coruscant with 200 other KX units. It was glorious, or whatever. Like, he's just like making small talk about how he was in this parade in a comedic way.
And the Emperor was there, he said.
Oh, that's right. He even name drops at the end. He goes, oh, yeah. Oh, and the Emperor was there. You know, like, why would a droid care about that? Or even why would Cassian? Anyway.
Yeah, just, exactly.
I mean, a throwaway scene doesn't add anything to it. Just sort of humanizes or roboticizes all of those characters. We see Melshi and Cat. They arrive back and they basically park their Y-Wing, like, on the street right in front of the safe house. And Melshi and Cassian, you know, they get on radios, they get headsets. They're going to go in and try and recover Kleya or whoever. I guess they don't know who it is at this point. That they're going to go into the safe house and recover whoever is sending this message. They leave K2SO in the ship with orders to keep the engines running because this is going to be a snatch and grab mission. They need to, this is huge potential for failure. So they want to. They tell K2SO basically to leave it parked in the loading zone with the engines running because they're going to be back. So I did note that this is the safe house building. The building is really run down and dirty. So how long has it been since anyone has used this safe house? At least a year? Because that was when the last time on the previous set of episodes when they were in there.
I suppose that's probably.
I was surprised to see the entire building looks decrepit and run down. I don't know what happened or why. Maybe it was like that even when they were using it. It was never really shown. But the point is, this is not a current building that's well kept, and there are a lot of other people living in. It's the slums, I guess.
I mean, there are other people living there.
That's true.
There's some,
right?
But,
like, when they're going through the halls, like, the water is leaking and there's dirty and trash. It just did not look hospitable. I would not want to live there if I didn't have to. Let's see. We see K2SO is in the cockpit of the ship, and he sees the Empire land. So we see Hurt has arrived, and they figured out where Kleya is, and they are hot on the trail. K2SO gets worried and actually gets out of his ship because reasons. I mean, he has to go and he realizes that staying in the ship is not going to be what they need. They need backup. So he actually leaves his post. I assume he leaves the engine running. That doesn't come up in this episode, but he gets out and he goes on board the Empire ship. So he goes on the Empire ship. He
does? I don't remember. I thought he just walks towards the apartments and throws some guy off the side. Does he go in the ship?
I thought so, because I thought he went on their ship and like basically punched a dude through the bulkhead or whatever. It's been a while since I watched the very end of this episode, but I wrote down that he goes on the Empire ship. I think he's going to try and take out their comms or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cassian thinks that Luthen is inside the apartment. He doesn't know. All he knows is that they've got this message on this old comms channel. He essentially knocks on the door with their secret knock. Clea opens the door.
Well, it's not only that he's yelling through the door saying Luthen is Cassian. So that's what I think gave Clea the okay to open the door.
She was definitely hesitant to open the door, even when she heard him, like thinking it was a trap.
She's been in that room for a couple days maybe, trying to send the signal and like just being all paranoid. And you can tell she's at her wit's end at that point.
She does finally open the door and she looks at Cassian and she says, "It would be you, wouldn't it?" So I think the implication there is that Cassian was Luthen's boy, not so much Clea's. I think she was happy to see him because she's happy to see anybody, but not really. I think she wanted anyone other than Cassian to show up.
Okay. I'm stepping into theoretical zone here, but with the flashbacks, we kind of saw how Clea became a daughter to Luthen. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the series, we've seen how Cassian has kind of sort of low-key become a son. Is there a little bit of sibling rivalry going on here?
Maybe I can see that.
She's jealous of the attention Cassian got from Luthen.
He's the golden child and he's doing all these missions and she's just in the background doing comms.
Maybe even to a degree she sees Cassian as being responsible for Luthen's death because Cassian was the one who brought Daedra into everything. And Daedra was following Cassian and then Daedra picked up on. So maybe that's... I don't know. I'm speculating.
I definitely slightly agree. I don't know about the son thing, but I kind of got the impression that Cassian was one of his underlings that pushed back the most and was like kind of disagreeable, whereas a lot of the other ones seem to be like have undying loyalty to Luthen. They were very loyal.
Clea was super loyal.
It seemed like Cassian disagreed with him often, so it seems like he's the least loyal, least likely to come trying to save Luthen, maybe, in her mind.
Well, there's basically 60 seconds left in the episode, so let's wrap it up, and then we'll talk about the implications here. Clea opens the door. It's Cassian. She's not super excited to see him. Cassian basically says, "We got to get the heck out of Dodge. Like, it's going to be bad news if you stick around here any longer." She doesn't want to leave. Cassian mentions the word Yavin, and she is familiar with it. She's heard of it, but she doesn't trust it, and it was not an immediate yes, like, get me the heck out of here, let's go to Yavin.
She knows that that her and Luthen have a bad reputation on Yavin.
Interesting. So yeah. She's not excited to. So the last part of the episode, we see, intermixed with this, we see the Empire basically storming through the building with, I don't know, a radio antenna, trying to pinpoint this signal. They end up on, I don't even know, floor 16, and Clea's on floor 17. They're literally directly below her, pointing this antenna at the ceiling in this old couple's apartment, and they realize, hey, she's right above us. We're really close. So all this is happening while Clea and Cassian are having their discussion, so there's going to be a clash between these two groups very, very soon in Starwipe, and we don't get any payoff. It was very cliffhanger-y. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any opinions before I go on?
No. I liked the episode. Are we wrapping it up? Are we scoring it?
No, we just got to the end. I'm just curious if... Jason? I miss anything? Is there anything you want to cover?
No, there was very, very little that happened. It's, you know, we stop. It's a setup episode for this conflict. I mean, we're, you know, Daedra's in prison. Clea is trapped. Cassian and team find her. Starwipe, you know, and the Empire's on their trail. You know, that's about it. So that's good.
I felt like the ending was a cop-out. I felt like the ending was very much like traditional Hollywood, and I expect more from Tony Gilroy. You basically get the knock on the door, you know, the police are here to arrest you, and then Starwipe, and then we have to wait till the next episode to figure out what it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. It builds tension. But to me, it felt below Tony Gilroy, like, come on, man. This is you know, a trope that's been done a million times. This isn't your deal. And maybe that's me being pedantic, but just the way they ended it, I was like, come on, man. Like, it felt lazy. It felt too easy.
Note, he is not a writing credit on this episode. I think the last three. It's someone called Tom Bissell is a writer and a different director as well. So, I mean, so I'm sure he's heavily Tom involved. Bissell, then? Yeah, we can blame Tom Bissell. Do you have his
email address? I'm gonna send him an email later.
Yeah, I mean, fuck Tom Bissell.
That's what we should call our episode, fuck Tom Bissell.
I'm with you, especially with the K2 component. We can get into that, but it's wearing thin on me. This droid thing that can do everything and is you know, the computer that we laugh at.
What do you mean it can do everything? It can't do anything.
It can storm through a bunch of stormtroopers and just wipe them out. I mean, it's just
a battle droid. That's what it does.
It's a magical fairy robot that can cook you breakfast and do everything.
It's like being mad at a tank for being able to shoot things.
But it's not. It's not even just brute force. It's very intelligent, very delicate, has fine motor skills. Like, it literally can do everything. I just don't like that.
Pause for a second. Because counterpoint to exactly what you're saying and pointing out the significance of the scene. No, it can't do everything. You watched it fail at calculating when it was playing a very human game of poker. It cannot understand human motivation or logic. And that was, I stand by 100%, that's the point of that scene, is to show us some of the limitations and flaws of K2. So it's not just a god robot like what you're trying to pass it off as.
But like in Star Wars,
in Star Wars,
start with episode over.
But like, we're in the heat of the Star Wars movies now.
I agree.
And in those movies, there were certain droids that have very specific missions, and they were just good at one or functions. A protocol droid that was good at interacting and translating, but like not very good at like physical things. You have the R2 unit, which is more technical and capable of calculating and flying ships. To have a droid like K2 that seems to just kind of do everything, you know,
it does one thing. It punches dude. It punched that guy in the Empire ship.
Fine motor skills. It can communicate just like an C-3PO unit. It's incredibly powerful for some reason. Why they haven't just flooded their armies with the K2 units puts a little tweak for me, you know, on this world.
But I don't care what you say. K2SO, most charming motherfucking robot in the series. Love it.
I like
him. Love Alan Tudyk. Love everything.
best droid in all of Star Wars.
Yeah, I think that for sure.
I'll put him up against that BB-8 motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, all day long.
The One Ring is the best ring in Lord of the Rings.
There are other rings in Lord of the Rings.
Like, literally just make the best. Anyway, I'm with you. It's very Hollywood, very, like, cut, star wipe. You know, we're setting up an episode.
If they hadn't ended the episode there, it would have been fine if you want to build the tension and then, you know, there's a payoff of, you know, they're dragging Cassian away in the back of a paddy wagon. I'm fine with that. But the fact that they ended it on that cliffhanger just felt like, oh my gosh, like really? Like that? It just seemed too easy and obvious.
They're ending the series here and they want an actual full-blown cliffhanger to lead into the last episode. So I'm very anticipatory of the last episode.
It's episode 11 out of 12. I don't need a cliffhanger to show up for 12. Like, I'm going to be there no matter what. Like, it is what it was.
Yeah.
I loved all the spycraft in this episode. I loved the character building. I loved the conversations. I loved Krennic's lines. Like, this felt very Tony Gilroy to me. There was zero show, not tell, right? I mean, or wait, I get it backwards. I mean, everything was laid out in the most Tony Gilroy. Nothing in this episode felt softballed to me. It all flowed organically. The characters all had good motivations.
It's all just characters discovering things we already knew.
Right.
That's all it is. And so it's like you're just watching characters slowly figure out things that I already knew. So it didn't satisfy my like mystery and like spycraft. And I don't think there was
there was never a mystery from the very start. We all knew where this was going to go.
That's a good point.
Well, I know it's a prequel. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
What I'm seeing with this episode that I appreciate, and I'll agree, it doesn't give us the payoffs that we want. But what it's doing is it's setting up the payoffs that we want. Again, we know where this goes. This goes to Rogue One. We know what characters are in Rogue One, so obviously they're going to live through this. We know what characters aren't in Rogue One, so we're curious about what happens to them. This episode sets it up, lets us know where people are at, what they're doing, what their motivations are, and it's finally putting the actions in motion that bring all of them together to go into Rogue One. This is not the episode that pays everything off.
It really builds up for next episode. I mean, there better be a pretty big payoff because, I mean, I got Star Wars blue balls when I didn't, you know, when there was no payoff in this episode. So, and I'm fine with that, but like Jason said, I think it sets expectations higher for the next episode.
Without dragging this out for too much longer, let me just pose this to you. Fix it. Don't end on a cliffhanger. Right. How do you do it?
You're asking the right question, and I'm not a screenwriter, so I mean, I'm picking at something I don't have a solution for. I just was not a fan of it. It's nitpicky. I didn't hate the ending. I just felt lazy. Overall, I loved everything else about the episode.
In fact, I think as I'm thinking, I don't think the cliffhanger specifically is what I am slightly disappointed by. It's kind of the stakes because we're at the end of the series and the stakes feel a little bit small. Like we're in one extraction mission to get Clea out of there, but like, and that we have a unit trying to extract her. There's some big stakes, but the mission and the stage feels a little bit small. So we'll see how the last episode goes for sure.
I mean, I feel like you're underselling it a little. Do you know what happens to the rebellion if Clea gets caught by the Empire?
Yeah.
It's
no, I
done.
I think the stakes are there.
So is that the risk? Is that they acquire Clea, they torture, and then they figure out that Yavin exists, and then they go blow the Empire, the rebellion up before it ever starts? That's what we're talking about, right?
Essentially, yes. No, plus, let's not forget, Clea, so far at this point, is the only one with the information about the Death Star on the rebellion side.
Yeah,
Luthen found out from Lonnie. Luthen told Clea,
and they haven't had time to disseminate that. Okay,
Luthen's dead. Lonnie's dead. Clea's the only one from the rebellion who knows. So the stakes that you're talking about, everything.
I agree. I shouldn't say stakes. I think the stage, just the stage. It's like a showdown in an apartment. So Clea, we'll see. But
so
like,
Clea is really the One Ring of this show. Is what I'm taking away from this conversation.
There's
the most important
and
thing.
No one can destroy her.
She's precious.
I do want to touch on what you said, Doug. The idea of it. We kind of know what's going to happen. We knew from the start, and that's kind of the new kind of lens that I've realized I'm looking at through this show. It's like we're looking at history. We're looking at Star Wars history, and we're kind of like zooming in on a really kind of key moment in the history of timeline of Star Wars. Like, wouldn't it be cool to like zoom in to like right before World War II and see the different characters involved in the assassination of Ferdinand or whatever? You know,
was World War I, but okay.
Okay. I'm not a history buff, but it'd be clearly, that's kind of what we're like when Partagaz and Krennic are arguing, you know, about the Death Star, and they're stressed about it, you know, they're leaking. Pressured and about it even becoming successful and operational. They're like, there's demands, but we know it's going to become operational, but they're still stressed, and so it's really interesting to look at that as a historical moment, you know, in real history. So
Gavrilo Princip was the guy who shot Archduke Franz Ferdinand. He was with the Black Hand Society, which was an anarchist society. Interestingly enough, he missed his first opportunity, and the driver took a wrong turn and had to turn back around. Princip had given up on his mission. He was just at a cafe. It was like, well, I guess I failed. And then he sees the Archduke driving back around. He's like, holy shit, I can start World War I. And then he did.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right, we've run a little bit long.
We need a Tony Gilroy show on that.
All right, so real quick. I loved the spycraft. I love the characters in this episode. 9 out of 10. Loved it. Good tension. Good everything.
Go, Doug.
9 out of 10. I agree with everything you just said. It's fun seeing all the pieces align. I mean, obviously, I know which way the dominoes are going to fall, but watching them fall is entertaining.
Right.
And I mean, I disagree. You guys are terrible at rating shows. I think it's an 8.2. A 0.8 difference is
going
to cause
off.
Us to go to war. No, I mean, it's a good show, but like, I disagree about the K2 stuff. And I'm worried that he's the MacGuffin and he's just going to save the day at the end. So let's hope that doesn't happen. But I'm excited. So we'll see.
All right. That's enough from us.
Logic gate out.
Hey, we did it right that time.
Dumbest ending
we
ever.
We finally, after the show is Noob just about started. To end.
Yeah, literally like the second to last episode, we finally get it.
Get our shit together.